the fact that minimum wage is unlivable should make you want to stay home until you're making a livable wage.
Yeah.
Not, I was making 15, now I'm making 25, so I'm going to move out. $25 still ain't shit.
Yeah. No, it really isn't. It really isn't, to be honest.
Hello, everybody. This is Let's Talk Forella, and I'm back with a special guest that I had before. If you were listening to the audio, is Big Zerk, the linguistic guru, my man David. Man, what's up, David? How you doing, bro?
Pretty good, pretty good. Good to be back. Good to be back. Good to have you back here, actually.
Hell yeah.
I mean, it's been more than a year since
literally
we actually spoke and had like long conversations, because I've been seeing you from time to time.
Yeah,
here around the city. But I mean, it's great catching up with you again.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Thank you for having me. It's good to be here. Shit, I'm connecting with everybody who showed me mad love on the podcast when I was just a fucking microphone on a table with my battery pack. So all those people I'm reconnecting with, okay, showing love to you guys. And I want my people to get to know the folks that I fuck with. So what you been up to, man? What's going on with you, bro?
Well, I mean, in the past year and a half, there has been a little bit of traveling. There has been a little bit of work. There has been a little bit of just staying at home, and a little bit of being with the family. I mean, it's been a pretty good and active year and a half. I think I had a big business growth in the past year and a half. My first full year as a translator and interpreter.
Okay.
Last year, so I was able to see actual numbers as to how much I'm producing just from that.
How was that?
And it was for the third year in a row. So I started doing translation interpretation in 2020. That's when myself and my co-owners, because I'm a co-owner of the company, we are about 9 or 10 people.
Co-owner of what company exactly?
We are Starlight Strategies California. We are a multi-service cooperative, so we do from translation interpretation to administration, bookkeeping. So we do a little bit of surveys, different services.
Hell.
But I do translation interpretation. So my team is a team of two translators and interpreters, and within my network, we have a reach of about 30 interpreters.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah,
that's impressive.
So we've been growing our networking, and we've been providing each other businesses along my network of interpreters. They give me gigs, I give them gigs. And it's been really, really good. All it came because I went to this conference by just a last minute referral this past February. It wasn't until February where my growth in the network of translators and interpreters grew.
So the last time I talked to you, you definitely weren't up to 30 people. And you're saying that your network grew from a reference.
Yeah.
That definitely sounds like the definition of your network is your network.
Yeah.
Who you know,
yeah,
is how you get ahead.
Yeah, it really is. And I've said it all throughout since I was in college, I think. Because in college, I saw... When you go into college and I mean, I know it's not for everybody, but when you do have the privilege of going to college and staying in college and creating those connections, you see the face value of individuals, not by what they're studying or anything. It's like everybody is there coming from all different parts of the country and the world, and you're there by yourself. So you start making friends that, whether it is through this same type of, same type of beliefs, same type of morals, or by just living next to each other, same type of classes or majors or whatever. But at the end of the day, it's like you're not seeing what they're bringing to the table. You're seeing them as who they are purely as people.
Yeah.
And from there, I say that my network, I mean, it honestly came out from hanging out, from going to parties, from being vulnerable with one another, but not really talking about business. Like, not once did we ever say, like, Not once did we ever say, like, oh, how can you as a bioengineer help me out in my career as a translator interpreter? Or how do you as studying administration are going to help me in my politics career or anything, right?
I'm not trying to put people down because of the titles.
Yeah. And so when you come out of college, now you created this value, and now you're all going into different aspects of the world and different types of jobs. So when the need is there, you know who is someone to trust and who someone is not going to let you down when you are recommending them for a professional favor or just lending you a hand professionally. Like, for example, I think I said it last time I was on the show, I was doing freelancing before I joined my co-owners in doing translation interpretation with Starlight Strategies. Mm-hmm. I was doing freelance, but my very, very first client was a recommendation from one of my friends who I would party so hard with, and he was the one who was like, hey, David, I know that I saw on Facebook that you were launching your freelance translation interpretation. I'm working for a nonprofit. Are you down to help me out? So it was, and from there is I proved my worth with my work, and they recommended me to other organizations, and then one thing led to another.
Hell.
And 2.5, almost 3 years later, we are here still providing nonprofits and growing with the network and the team. And
that shit is giving me chills right now.
Man, it's been crazy. And I've been able to reconnect with college friends through work that I had never thought I was going to be able to reconnect professionally. Like, you keep in touch with your friends through social media messages or whatever. But the fact that you're able to hang out with your friends and hang out and you're like, bro, like, we were really just getting blacked out drunk 2-3 years ago.
Yes.
And now here we are leading conferences, translating conferences. You are organizing conferences. Like,
yes,
we are out here doing things that I don't think we kind of saw ourselves doing in the near future, because 3 years is not too far away, right? 3-4 years is not too far away. It's really near. It's the near past now.
Yeah.
So the fact that I'm doing that, I don't know. It's like, it's a constant reassurance that what I chose was the right decision, and I'm enjoying every part of it. I think it's been a great journey.
Dude, that's honestly amazing, because for anybody listening, your story 100% is the proof that if you stay consistent in anything that you are doing. Like, 3 years ago, did you think that you were going to be in the place that you are today when you first started Linguistics?
No, because 3 years ago, I made $400 of translations in a whole year. $400.
But did that make you want to give up?
3 years later, I 10 times that 3 years in a row. So from 400 to 4,000 to 40K. So hopefully, well, this year I'm not doing the 10 times. Almost $500,000 for translation interpretation would be wild. Although I
doubt that was coming. 400 to 40K, not 10 times.
Wait, what?
Like from when you first started making $400 a year, and now you're at the point where you still own the business, but then now you're at the point where now the Linguistics is making a steady income. Mm-hmm. It's like, bro, that's growth.
It is. And it didn't feel like really exhausting, because once again, I want to relate it that it goes to your network, because if I wasn't able to take care of my clients, I always had one or two other interpreters who I could just call and be like, hey, I can't take this client. And I've worked with them and they've given me gigs. So it was like a symbiotic relationship that we're just taking care of each other's clients. And I think that's the key to growing, that you don't have to saturate your, yes, you do have to saturate your time before you can actually see the necessity that you don't have to do the work yourself. that you have, that instead of doing the work yourself, you are now coordinating the work that you used to do. And it's like a progressive, it's a progressive growth.
Look, I can definitely touch on that, because it's like when you're trying to build something, as great of a person as you are, or however control of the situation you may think that you have, it's like I've even been in the realm of overwhelming myself with trying to wear the hat of every job that I need done, because I need it done a certain way.
Yeah.
When guess what? There's other people out there qualified to do exactly what you need them to do. And guess what? They do what you need done really well, and you do what they need done really well. And I heard a really good quote. If you want to go fast, you go alone. But if you want to go far, we go together.
Yeah,
and it is exactly what you got going on, dude. That's fucking inspirational.
Yeah. And thank you. And I want to add, like, you know, it also comes with the way that my business is structured. Well, my company is structured because we're not an enterprise. We are a cooperative. So the whole aspect of the cooperative is that all of us are contributing to the business, so that, because we were all freelancers at one point, and we were all doing the administration, the bookkeeping, the outreaching, the publicity, and everything. So when you come into a business as a cooperative, everybody has the same value of saying, like the same value of decision making. It's like a democratic process. It's a democratic process, but you're also dividing the weight of the work. You have someone who's good with numbers, so you have them as a bookkeeper. You have someone who's good at organizing, project management, and all that, so you have them as administrators. You have someone who's really good at social media, or someone who is just okay at social media, but no one else is better than him. So then you have him as doing the Instagram post or the Facebook or something. But now nobody is doing everything, and now all the jobs are being done with
the best abilities. Yes.
So it's the whole concept of cooperative. What I think has also allowed me to grow in my business is that we are not just individual entities, because we're all running our different business differently, right? Like me as an interpreter, I'm reaching out to the companies that need interpretation. Those who offer administration, they're reaching out for themselves for administration or whatever, or we're looking, right?
Yeah.
But we're not just we're all together, but we're all independent. Like I'm not governing how you do your administration reach out, but you're not gonna govern how I do my interpretation reach out.
Yeah.
So it's like we're all in the same company, and we're all running our individual businesses, but we are all the business owner of the business.
You
have to find value in who you know. It's your social capital.
Yeah.
You know,
it's not what you do, it's who you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
Hell yeah. So business has been going obviously amazing, especially since the last time we talked. Is there anything right now going on in the world that you feel like I wouldn't say extreme towards, because extreme is a crazy word, but like passionate about?
There are two topics that I've really been thinking about and watching a lot of videos of and all that stuff. One of the things is the transformation that has been happening in El Salvador with Bukele. I have a few friends who are from El Salvador, and they fled El Salvador as kids. And now that they're able to leave the country and come back, they have gone back to El Salvador, and they say that there's such a peace that you can breathe in the streets that, I don't know, like there were a lot of people talking and condemning the president in El Salvador, but the testimonies of the people that are going back to the country and visiting it and reminiscing on what they left sort of says different about the results of how El Salvador took the bull by the horns, right? Mm-hmm. Which is the whole the danger that was lived there by the gangs. But I'm not very well versed in everything. You know, everybody has opposing views about El Salvador and about like him acting as a dictator and about suspending. I think he suspended the constitution, so by declaring a state of emergency, so he could do whatever.
Who?
Bukele.
Bukele. Who's this?
The El Salvador's president.
Okay.
He's the one. I think he went in the way that he was able to do the transformation. I believe, from what I remember reading, is that he had suspended. He had suspended the constitution, therefore giving him sort of like almost like the full reign of the country, obviously with the aid of his military and all that stuff, right? So he has to have some sort of consensus in other bodies of power to be able to do the change that he's done. And he was able to do that. So, and I recently was watching a video on this, and it was talking about how they were able to do a whole overhaul of their judicial system, because there were judges, there were policemen who were acting in conjunction with the gangs, which is what's happening also in Mexico, right? Mm-hmm. So I sort of see El Salvador as like something that could really happen in Mexico. But what happens in one country doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to work in Mexico. Yes. Because we are different sizes. Mexico has 125 million people, or almost 200 million people. Mm-hmm. And El Salvador is one of the smallest countries in the continent. So you cannot necessarily do the same type of action that happened in El Salvador, because there's such a lot less room to run away.
Yeah.
Than it is in Mexico. Mexico is one of the 15th biggest countries in the world, I believe, in landmass. And it's full of desert, it's full of jungle, it's full of mountains. So the terrain is really rugged. Mm-hmm. You know, the country's population lives in one third of the country.
Yeah.
You know, they occupy one third of the country. So like there's a lot of space, empty space that you can go and hide over there.
Yeah.
And we're also bordering the United States, right, with the northern border, where, you know, they say that undocumented people flow from Mexico to the United States, but guns flow from the United States to Mexico. So at the end of the day, it's like, I don't know, the border is like a big problem, right?
Yeah.
For both countries. One says that they are allowing individuals to come in. The others say that they're allowing drugs and guns and all that stuff. So I don't know. It just depends what way you're looking at it.
So how do you feel about the immigration?
Oof. As a person who was born in Mexico City and moved to California when I was 11 years old, in a way, I kind of see it like every man for themselves. Everybody has the right to move to where they think they can make a better living, under the pretext that they will contribute, right? That mm-hmm. they are here in good faith, or wherever they decide to move. Could be Mexico, could be Canada, could be the UK, wherever.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. But it's like under the pretext that they are coming to better themselves and their surroundings. I don't have anything against that. The way that it is happening, I do have something against it.
Like with them like shuttling immigrants to like capitals all over.
Yeah.
Like what the fuck's the deal with that?
So it's the way that the administration is handling the migration, and I also understand that there's a lot more people coming to the border than there were in previous years, so they don't know how to control 2,000, 3,000 people coming every day, right? But it still doesn't help the fact that they are dispersing them all around the country without any type of work authorization or protections that will allow them to create capital, or will allow them to activate the economy or activate themselves within the economy.
So my question to you is, all 2,000-3,000 people who flee to America should instantly just be handed a pass to have a chance here?
You see, it's complicated. it's complicated because you cannot just say everybody come through the border, you get a work permit and all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
The majority of the people who are being let through, they are being let through the asylum process. They are not being let through, like there's just as how there could be 2,000-3,000 people coming in, there could be only 100 people that are actually let through and the other ones are turned back. You see, this is where we have to really look into what the administration is really doing, because they're not handling things right. Had they, and it could just be that you can blame it on the White House, you can blame it on the Congress, you can blame it on local politicians, right? But at the end of the day, everybody is an actor in the way that the immigration is being played out in the United States. We really didn't have this problem. I mean, I may sound like a Trumpist, but I'm not. But like there were things that were sound. There were things that were sound, right? Like, yes, during 2020, there were a lot of things that happened, pandemic and all that stuff. And that's why, in a way, we had to close the borders. But keeping them closed also helped the flow of migrants that were fleeing their countries because of pandemic, because of everything. Right? The pandemic just exacerbated everything. And since then, we've just been seeing the result of what it brought about. So we weren't ready for it, and we're still not ready for what it brought. So we're just trying to deal with it, and neither were the administrations. And so they say they're doing the best they can, but in reality, they've always been incompetent in the terms of immigration. You have the last time that there was an immigration overhaul for an amnesty was with Reagan in 85, which was called the IRCA. And the majority of the people who were legalized were people that were working here under the Bracero program, or people who were working in the fields, mostly service workers. And that's why you have a diaspora in the United States where you have families of mixed status, because people came here in the early 80s. We have people that have been coming in the 90s to have reunited with the people that were here in the 80s. And, you know, they're just going through the decades without having a solution for them, because maybe they did cross illegally, or maybe they overstayed their visa, or they might have gotten maybe a DUI. Sometimes you mess up, you know, like sometimes you have a bad day, whatever. Doesn't mean that you're justified for doing that. But, you know, like everybody can fuck up.
Yeah.
And so for one reason or another, they haven't been able to be legalized. And 9/11 didn't help, because that's when ICE was created. That's when TSA was created. And then you have the housing market in 08 that it just didn't even help. You know, it was worse because people were losing jobs. People were losing houses. People were losing everything.
Look, it's funny you mention that, because right now in 2023, we are described the greatest depression. Like our money now, our value of everything now is 2 times worse than what it was during the actual Great Depression, because their value of money back then per household with what they considered was the Great Depression, every adult over the age of 18 on average, with their money calculated, was five grand. Now the average for our people, that means that the average income for the average American back then was at least $50K a year. Yeah. In the fucking 60s and 70s? Mm-hmm. Well, when the year did the Great Depression happen?
I believe that was in the 30s, because World War II reactivated the economy.
Yeah, so they were making $60K a year per household. Do you know that over fucking 65, well, a large percent, don't quote me, I definitely know it's over 45% of Americans that make fucking less than like $30K a year.
Yeah, yeah. I was talking to my mom not too long ago about minimum wage.
Because it should be livable wage.
It should be livable wage, yes. But we say minimum because that's the minimum
that we can pay you legally.
Government is allowing you, well, it's allowing the company to pay you to not make it seem like it's slavery.
Yeah, when in reality it is 100% slavery, because the job that majority, if not all of jobs, mm-hmm. I'm going to say all jobs that pay minimum wage in America, you're not living. You're not surviving. You're not living out of the house. And that's why people really need to get comfortable with staying your ass at home. Mm-hmm. Don't try to move out unless you got a kid or something like that. Like, guys, get used to living at home with your parents because shit is so motherfucking expensive. Yeah. You trying to go live in a condo with your man so y'all can seem like y'all doing good because your whole family said that y'all would do bad by having that baby. Stay at home because I promise you I'm financially good now. But if I had the ability to stay at home and still progress through my job or still progress through school and still fucking travel and understand that life isn't about me trying to rush to go get a car, to go get a house. It's like, guys, save your money because the fact that minimum wage is unlivable should make you want to stay home until you're making a livable wage.
Yeah.
Not, I was making 15. Now I'm making 25, so I'm going to move out. $25 still ain't shit.
Yeah. No, it really isn't. It really isn't, to be honest.
Like with the gas, food. Bro, the medium rent. Medium rent, like on average to live in California right now, comfortably, you got to make $35 an hour to live comfortably alone as an individual man or woman. You ain't got no kids. Shit, they never said if you had a car payment, but
yeah.
It's like,
yeah, car payment, insurance, healthcare, you need new tires. It's outside of the freaking car payment, man. I don't know.
Everything. And all of that is not fucking not thought about. And then it's like, to touch on the immigrant thing, it's like, we are, for some reason, America is put in this pit of, you guys are the ones who are responsible for taking care of absolutely everybody. How come no other country in the world is responsible for immigrants? Just America? Just us, we're the only ones responsible for housing all immigrants, no matter where they come from. How come we're the only ones at that level of responsibility?
Because, well, I got a good answer for that one. Well, I don't think is the United States the only country who is taking in immigrants, because we have, well, you hear the news reports about a lot of migrant boats trying to make it out to Greece and dying, 200, 300 people dying. You have people trying to cross through Poland into Europe. You have Germany taking in a lot of Middle Easterns. You have Spain taking a lot of North Africans. You have Europe also taking a lot of, the UK taking a lot of Middle Easterns. So it is not that it is not just the United States. Is that the global North has, in a way, the ability to better sustain these individuals than their own countries. And it is, I also don't think that it is just the fact that we are the ones that need to take care of them, is that we have put ourselves in that position by the way in which we have realized ourselves as a nation in the international world stage. Because people don't go to El Salvador, well, now they're going to start to, but people don't go to Guyana to flee poverty. You know, you don't hear Guyana about for anything in the global stage or anything going into war, whatever.
Yeah.
You don't hear Suriname freaking receiving thousands and thousands of immigrants because of their economy or healthcare or anything. Like, we have put ourselves in the stage of the world and people are looking at us. And if people are looking at us, we're going to get attention. And our economy is fueled by war. So ever since we became a country, we have been at war minus maybe half a century. And that's cumulatively. But at the end of the day, we are the ones that have done it to ourselves. And it is ingrained in the fabrics of our nation of give us your, what is that thing that's in the quote in the Statue of Liberty? Give us your yearning or something.
Oh,
you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So give us your give us the people that are suffering.
Don't quote us. Don't quote us.
Go to New York City and look for that quote personally.
Travel like this guy and you'll be able to see what that quote says.
Yeah. So Ellis Island should be in Ellis Island. You get a little certificate. I didn't make it to Ellis Island, but I made it to Staten. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's just the fact that we're just in the international world, and we are also one of the most powerful countries militarily, and that probably means that we're also stable economically, although it looks differently in the inside.
Okay, look, let me ask you that, because now you said we're strongest military. I've also been seeing in the media that they're trying to push this narrative that you guys should pay attention to a lot of the immigrants that are coming over, because they're all, I've been seeing, I don't believe it, but it's, watch out for the immigrants coming over, because a lot of them are military age male. What does that mean? They're trying to take us over from the inside, yada, yada, blase. I keep seeing all kind of bullshit like that. So, like, what's your take for why that is?
Well, I mean, if people really had common sense, this is what
common sense ain't common.
What I think, all right? This is maybe I don't have common sense. Maybe I just have a sense, right? But I think that military age men 16 to 25 are coming because they are probably the ones that either don't have a family yet or they have a young family. They are the ones that either way make the bread. So if they come to the United States to work to send money back to their families and maybe later on reunite with them is what makes sense to me. Because you're not going to send your wife and your two-year-old across the border if you don't have somewhere to receive them, right? Because they're going to be home. Like, what are we seeing? They're being homeless. So yes. What they're doing is, I think that they're sending the men first so they can establish a foundation so that when they are ready to bring their families over, they can do it and not have them sleep in the streets as how we currently have them sleeping in.
Yeah. Yes.
So I don't think this is an invasion. People can think it is, but I just think it is the necessity of somebody willing to survive.
Yeah.
Whether it is in the United States, whether it is in Mexico, Canada, the UK, whatever, they're just wanting to survive. And if they're sending the men first, is because the men are the ones that
who would survive in order to have the family
exactly.
Come over.
Exactly.
And then it's like, honestly, I really feel like they're pushing that is because, like you said, you've dealt with immigration. For somebody who hasn't, I wouldn't think of that as a possibility, but it 100% does make sense. And the whole reason that they push that for us to look at immigrants a certain way is for us in America, we already have a fucking unnecessary ass division. You go to any other country in the world, you know what race me and you are? American.
Mm-hmm.
That is all.
Yeah.
Only in America is race a thing. And since we can't fucking argue over black, white, yellow, blue, green, now we have people coming over to seek opportunity. And now if you title those people with, oh, they're trying to invade us from the inside, oh, these immigrants are not here for us, then you will have the people who are already dealing with, like, blacks, Mexicans, we already got this shit down pack. Asians, we already got this shit down pack. We understand that if we stay together, right, we will flourish together. But for some of us who haven't realized that yet, are now starting to look at the immigrants like they're completely less than what I am. Mm-hmm. America already makes me seem like I ain't shit because I'm black, but you know what's worse than me? An immigrant. Mm-hmm. And that's not the truth at all. If you pay attention, they're a person just like you,
mm-hmm,
whose opportunity came a little bit later from yours.
Yeah.
And they're going to be given different right circumstances from you.
Right.
So does that mean that they should be blocked from an opportunity?
Absolutely.
Not at all.
Absolutely.
Not at all.
I mean, and also I just think that the way that it's being handled, it's also used to create, like you said, you know, like the creation of a narrative that it is against that community. And by creating that sentiment, I mean, because we have elections coming up soon in a year and a half, right?
Immigration is higher than ever.
Exactly. You know, it's always a burning point in every election cycle. So it is just logical that we're about to, that every year and a half prior to elections that they try to exacerbate or may or create a narrative against immigration or for immigration. So the immigrant community is sort of used to it, or the immigrant community that has been here for a long time, for 20, 25 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
But those who are coming, they are coming into a shit show, and they are making this shit show even bigger, but they don't have another option, right? They don't have another option. So I think we need to be able to hold our government accountable, whether that's through voting. I mean, maybe that works, maybe that doesn't. I don't know. I don't vote. So
I don't want to talk about politics.
So people, you do what you got to do, but at the end of the day, hold your representatives accountable. We are representatives.
Hold them accountable. All I have to say is just pay attention. I'm not going to say what side I am, Trump team. But just pay attention. Like, don't ever have a bias. It's like, I don't want to talk about this because I'm going on. Let's stop right here, please.
Oh, you know, okay. So we have a big problem with homelessness too, right?
Yes.
Which immigration is exacerbating.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you think about what's going to happen once robots come in more into our industries, and now we have people out of jobs? Do you think that this homelessness is going to boom even more, or what? Because, I mean, homelessness is only increasing, and we're trying to make money. So,
okay.
Yeah, sure, we're making money, but who is making that money?
Okay, so to touch on that, that was a really good one. First and foremost, it doesn't matter about the homeless population, because the homeless task force, those motherfuckers' salary is so big. And if you look at from when the homeless task force started to the growth of homelessness, their salaries have only gone up, and so has the homeless population.
Interesting.
So what is really being tasked? That's equivalent to me owning a store and my theft is high. I hire David as a security and my theft becomes higher. Is David a good security guard?
Right.
He is not.
Right.
He is not. And look, this right here, now I feel like this is the point that I'm calling the great divide. Mm. Like, you ever watch those dystopian society movies, and it's the extremely rich over there,
yeah,
and it's everybody else over here? That's exactly what it's coming to. And AI is an introduction for people who are like, oh, Mr. Rich Guy, how do you think you're going to flourish without blase blah being done? The AI is an introduction to show you how you're going to lose your job.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who create it, the people who code it, the people who integrate it to make sure that you stay submissive, they're the only ones who's going to make the money until we make an AI to cut them out. Because if you're making $10, $20 million a year, cute. You're not making billions. Your money has no influence. Therefore, you're on the other side of, you don't know shit just like us.
Yeah.
And AI is just an introduction of, it's like, it's the equivalent. AI, look, I call AI the new guy. You know why? Because if you're in a relationship with your girl and y'all kind of rocky, and you meet her new friend who's a little bit more athletic than you, who looks a little bit more better than you, who drives the car that you always talk about you wanted to get, yeah, that's the new guy. That's the guy you shouldn't worry about, because we're just friends. Don't worry about him.
That's just friends.
And then when the new guy fucks you, then you're like, I knew he was coming this whole time.
I saw him coming.
That's AI.
You know, I recently had a conversation with another
professional. We were talking about AI, and we were talking about, he asked me, are you scared that AI is going to take your job away as a translator and interpreter? And I was like, look, you know, I thought about it for a second, because I was like, well, yeah, you know, AI suddenly is going to become a lot better with a lot less mistakes when you put something to translate, because I myself use sometimes AI to
to do my translations when they are just gigantic. But I still have noticed that there are a lot of errors in the translations and whatnot. So I'm only integrating AI to make my job easier.
Okay, but let me also say this. AI is artificial intelligence, meaning that it's always going to learn.
It's from always learning.
Mistakes.
Right, right.
Perfect those. Right. Make new mistakes. Perfect those.
Right.
But AI isn't man. AI could reach a point of imperfection,
right.
But the only thing that makes us so skeptical about AI is because we haven't been introduced on how it could take our jobs yet.
Right, right.
That's why.
So let's say AI keeps learning and right, the translation accuracy is impeccable. But I'm a linguist. I'm not just a translator and interpreter. My whole thing about linguistics is that I look into language theory and I look into how we can understand better, into how we can better the understanding of AI with our language nuances that happen in every language. Mm-hmm. Because the AI is not going to learn unless it has an input. So we humans are creating that input for the AI to be learning. So as a linguist, and I don't know why I haven't done it. I always keep thinking like I should go to Meta or I should go to Apple and go into the Siri or the Google, whatever, the Google Assistant or something, because I always have so many problems with the AI, with the speech recognition. And I have an accent, but my accent is not too fucked up. I don't know if we can curse.
Yeah, you can curse. This is my fucking podcast.
So at the end of the day, like, I'm always getting mad at the language recognition. So as a linguist, I'm always like, man, they could do this, they could do that, they could train it with different accents and or whatever, which Google is doing, but not Apple. So I see myself at some point working in behind the scenes of the language recognition of our AI, because language is still going to be morphing. Language is still going to be changing, because who creates language? The humans, right? And who dictates how language is used? Humans.
Yes.
So instead of saying going to, it has morphed to gonna. And that wasn't in the 80s. I mean, in the 1800s, we didn't have that,
mm-hmm.
right? So AI would probably not have understood what gonna was, because he never had an input with gonna. So as language morphs and all that stuff, we're still gonna be needing humans to be training these AIs. So no, I'm not afraid of losing my job, because linguistics has the flexibility to move across industries. So linguistics and politics, I think that's the best combination.
I think if we put AI in politics, the world would probably move a lot more smoother. It wouldn't have a bias. It wouldn't have a money advantage. It wouldn't have a friend is trying to help out. It wouldn't have a corporation just trying to push. It would just know right and wrong.
But it would be black and white. But humans are not just
black and white.
Yeah,
which is why we're so irrational. Also, because if David stole money from me, David's my friend. Now I'm gonna treat him differently.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, David is a person who stole from me.
Right. Right.
That's AI.
Right.
Humanity is David stole from me. He's my buddy. But now David's going to steal from me again,
mm-hmm.
because he had no consequences, mm-hmm. because that emotion is what gets us every single time.
Or it could just be like, I don't know, like, for example, we don't even have to go to that extreme. We can just go to the extreme of the autonomous drivers, the autonomous driving cars, right?
Yes.
You have someone inside the car who the car is driving to a destination, and then you have an old person with a baby, right? They're crossing the street, but then it's the car is going at such a speed, the humans are gonna be humans, they're gonna jaywalk. Who does the AI protect? The passenger in the car, or runs over that old lady with the baby? So then that's where we humans have to train And the AI, like, let's say, can always be like, well, I'm always going to protect the passenger, so I'm just going to run over the lady with the baby.
But then the AI could also be, I'm trained to stop at anything that crosses in front of my path. And now you're on your destination, stopping for a squirrel, stopping for a cat, stopping for a dog.
It's black and white.
And then what? Wasn't there just a fucking massive car pileup in like
San Francisco
with all the fucking AI cars?
Yeah.
That couldn't make a left turn.
Yeah.
Because like people, we don't obey a 3-second stop at a stop sign. So one person rolling a stop sign could fuck up three AIs at a four-way intersection if they're all meant to stop at a three-point interval before they go. Mm-hmm. But if I run the stop sign, they're all off.
Right, right.
And then it's like, come on, bro. If you watch Black Mirror, you would not want AI at all.
Governing or...
Bro, any possibility you could think of how you would want to use AI, Black Mirror has an episode for it, and you're going to be sitting there like, you don't want this. Like, I don't want to get used to not being able to do what I need to be done. Because like right now, if the whole world stopped and everything shut down, do you have the ability to go build a house and start farming? No.
Right.
AI is just going to prevent us further from having basic regular skills.
We're going to become more stupid.
How many people can look at a regular clock at our big ass grown adult age and tell the fucking time?
Bro, none. You have no idea how many
none
encounter. Can you though?
Motherfucker.
Okay. Show me a clock.
I have a clock that's stuffed up there.
I get you.
Bro, people can't even tell you what day it is.
Right.
Yeah. Bro, if you took anybody, any friend, took them somewhere they're unfamiliar with and dropped them off, they don't know where they're at. They won't know who to call. They won't know who to contact.
Yeah.
They won't know anything.
Yeah. All I know, for example, if I were to get dropped off in the middle of the desert, at least I know east to west, thanks to the sun. And if I know east to west, then I know my north and south.
What that got to do with your ass needing water and walking 30 miles?
Bro, you don't need to walk 30 miles. You can dig for water in the desert. You have cacti. Like... You have cacti. That store water.
You can't drink all water from cactus, though.
I thought there was that you could.
But which ones, though?
The ones that have, if you have tunas, all you got to do is just cut that tuna, burn the things up, and just...
Motherfucker, so now you stranded in the desert, and now you got tuna.
I'm looking for, if there's cacti, there's tunas.
Like, wait, like tuna fish?
No, the tuna fruit.
Tuna fruit?
There's a tuna fruit.
What is that?
It's a fruit that grows on cacti and is really juicy and really sweet.
So if you see a cactus with a tuna fruit, I'm drink that water.
No, I'm eating that tuna.
So if I'm stranded in the desert and I see a cactus, what about it do I know? Water.
So, okay, at least in the Mexican desert, you have, and it's probably also in the Sonoran Desert in Arizona, because the Sonoran Desert crosses into Arizona, New Mexico. So you have this cacti called nopal.
Okay.
So it's one of those flat ones that look like just like a leaf.
Yes.
So familiar. That one grows tunas. And
okay.
Those tunas can be yellow or can be bright red. All you have to do is cut them, take out the thorns, cut it in half, and it has so much juice, so much flavor. It's cool. It's like a cool, it's a cool fruit. It's really.
I'm teaching y'all how to survive in the desert, y'all. Take fucking notes.
Just in the Sonoran Desert. I don't know if there's tuna.
If you're stranded in Mexico, you're good.
Yeah. And that's it. I mean, otherwise, just kill an animal and eat and drink the blood. I don't know. Something.
God damn.
Something. I mean, if I'm desperate, I'm going to.
What animal do you think you could be in the desert? Stranded in the desert, see this animal, kill it with your bare hands. You don't got a weapon, you don't got a knife, nothing. You telling me if you see a boar, you gonna crack your knuckles and be like, boar blood tonight?
You got rocks? We're humans, we can make weapons. What do you mean? we are humans. But I mean, I think that the easiest thing to catch would be a lizard, you know?
Lizards are okay.
You can catch a lizard.
My biggest thing about like not drinking cactus is I love psychedelics more than the next guy, but I don't want to be out there tripping off some peyote.
Oh, yeah, because peyote, it is some type of cactus.
And it is an indigenous cactus to the desert. And the peyote are the ones that grow in the cylinder, and it's like a star formation, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if you want to get high, eat a peyote, right? Oh, look, okay. I've heard
never done
from peyote. A friend. I've never done peyote, but I know if you cut the peyote, skin it, take the thorns out, blend it, then drink it. They said that's like how you're supposed to consume peyote to get the psychedelics, because when I lived in Arizona, like in college and in elementary, anywhere there's a high school or neighborhood, look at all the peyotes. They're cut. They got cuts out of them. Like people will go cut them, get trippy as fuck, get high.
That's what I did not know that.
Like if you go to like little homeless camps in Arizona's where like, and now I know it's a peyote, but like say there's like a cactus there, you'll see that motherfucker chopped to bits.
That's why I didn't know that. I mean, I knew that people would go to like Sedona and whatnot for their spiritual trips.
Yeah.
But I didn't know it was to that extent.
So you get trippy?
You know, I've gotten trippy a couple times. But not when, with the magic mushrooms.
Yeah. Psychedelics only. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Those have been cool. I mean, I did them when I was in college, in the forest. I think that's
the only place to do it. Like if you've ever done psychedelics at a party, no, because psychedelics, like for the people out there, don't do psychedelics because of what we're about to tell you, but
don't do it at home or ever.
Don't do it at home or ever unless you're with somebody who you really, really trust and like they're your longtime best friend.
At your own risk.
At your own risk. Try it. Don't try it. We're not liable. But everybody should at least know what is the right amount, because when you're taking psychedelics, chocolate, if it comes in squares, take half.
Yeah.
If you're dealing with actual mushrooms and you're a newbie, take a cap. What is a cap? The cap, the stem, the whole thing is a shroom. Take the cap, eat it. Take the cap off, eat the stem.
Yeah.
One, takes 10 minutes to, I say like 20 minutes to kick in. How do you know? You might feel a little different. Your palms might sweat. Your soles of your feet might sweat.
Your stomach may feel a little funky.
Because it's a fungus.
Isn't it?
And you will have the shits after. Nobody tells you about the fungus shits.
I was just mad about the nausea. Like I was so I wanted to puke for a second when it started to kick in. I started feeling a little sick and clammy.
Yes.
And then once you pass that,
you're fine.
So
you're good. You're
one with the universe.
We're not telling you to try psychedelics, but it's different than weed. It's different than anything.
Yeah.
Like it is. And then look, the biggest reason why I wanted to take psychs is because I was like reading the Forbes magazine, and then like the one percenters, like the 1% of people in the world who own everything, a few of them had articles in there where they talked about how they microdosed every single day in order to stay mentally creative, mentally aware, just to feel different, like all the time.
Yeah.
And like psychedelics are definitely, yeah,
I don't,
10
I,
out of 10. It,
my experience was that, I mean, at least the first time, was that I had a lot of ideas just coming in.
Yes.
That I couldn't keep up saying the ideas that were coming into my brain, because you're like, literally you're a magnet of ideas and words. And the as you go into your journey, your body cannot keep up with everything that you're receiving. You're a receptor.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, that's how I can see that. I remember just saying, it was like, I'm racing against my thoughts.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Like, the worst thing you could probably do, to add to what you're saying, is because I had a situation where I had took some and my dumbass was like about to go to bed. And I took them and they I say they're an amplifier, because when you're in a good mood and you're in a great mood, when you're horny, you're extra hard. When you're fucking your ex, you're lasting longer. If you're in the forest, the vibe is better. Yeah. If you're on a fucking first date, if you're on a first day and you're no and you're fucking nervous, take a shroom. You will have the best conversations ever because it's here.
Yeah.
And then it's like Lion's Mane and all that shit. Like, I wanna, like, shrooms are like, dude, I try to go to sleep and then I'm asleep and I kept waking up. And then I'm like, let me go paint real quick. And then I lay back down and like I just was like wide awake mentally, like where I'm like, holy fuck, I have to do something right now.
Yeah, I once tried to go to bed while on a journey because the journey was too long. And but it wasn't with shrooms. My friend had given me something with something that? Else. There were some seeds. There were grounded seeds.
Poppy seeds?
No, I think they were called woodrow seeds.
Woodrow?
Woodrows.
Woodrows. What's that?
They're like tiny. They were like tiny, shiny black seeds.
Okay.
And oh, I hope you bleep the name of the seeds.
It won't be bleeped.
Don't do it at home or ever, bro. I'm not telling you.
No, anything we're telling you, all these drugs, consider them.
These are just anecdotes of life.
I'm never taking woodrow.
So my friend was like, hey, you know, wanna journey with me? And I was like, you know, it's like 8 p.m. We did college today. I think we deserve a journey. So, and it was like a Friday. So,
oh yeah,
you know, we went in and without food.
If you want me to do anything I don't want to do, hit me up on a Friday after work. I'll just do it.
And then we started watching. We're like, okay, because it was going to take like 30, 40 minutes to start hitting. So we just started watching a stand-up comedy. I think it was Dave Chappelle or something.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And I just remember that suddenly I just couldn't pay attention to the show. And all I could see were like invisible waves just coming through the wall. And then I would feel nauseous at first. And then I could like feel the invisible wave of energy coming. Then I would like, oh, this is like an invisible wave. And it would just like come. And once it would like pass me, the nauseous feeling would go away. And then again, and then like 5 minutes like later, like a pulsation.
And you're like,
yeah, like a pulsation.
Save me.
And they would just like come in waves and suddenly like more often and more often. And once it was hitting, we turned off the TV and we're like, let's go to our friend downstairs. Cause I was living in the apartment, in some apartment. So like, let's go to our friends downstairs. Let's talk because they wanted to see how it was hitting us. So we were just sitting in the couch and on the couches in the living room of their apartment. And we were just talking and they were asking us questions, how we're feeling and all that. And I remember I was sitting on a couch like this big, like just like a one person sitter. And I had a chair in front of me and I put my foot up. I was talking, observing. And suddenly I look at my foot and then my foot just like elongates all the way across with the chair all across the room. And I was like, I can't. No, I bring my foot down. And then my foot like returned to its normal length. When I brought it down, I was like, okay, that's weird. Uh-huh. So then I put it back up and then it, like the same thing, my leg just started shooting across and I was like, no.
Like when you go fish out on your phone and
like
everything's
like. Like Elastic Man. Like just imagine literally your leg extending. Just stretching.
Yeah.
Yeah, just stretching like that. And I would like bring it down again and I would like stand up to make sure that I'm still standing well, that I'm not elongated. And then I was like, okay, I'm not going to put my foot on the chair anymore. So then I sat on the couch and then the couch just suddenly doosh, expanded to the sides and I would like stand up and then the couch was normal again. And then I'll sit down and again.
This is red rose.
The wood rose. Yeah.
Wood rose.
Yeah. Okay. And then he would the couch down. Just like expand again. And then I was like, you know what? This is too trippy. I'm going to lay down and close my eyes for a little bit. Like, let me go inside my head.
Yeah.
So then I went inside my head, closed my eyes, and then I was transported back to like, there's a specific picture when I was like 1 year old and we're outside of my house and we're ready to like go out to the parking lot and then just like have family time. And like I was transported in my head to that moment to like I was reliving it in a first person and in a third person point of view. And like I would like open my eyes and I would come back to
what the
but
fuck?
The second that I would close my eyes, I would be transported back into that image. And
this just sound like DMT.
Like soon after that, it was like 10 minutes and I was like, no, like I'm tripping too hard. And I was like, I got up and I was like, how about we go back to the apartment? And like I think I'm done with being outside. Like I need to go back to the apartment.
Yeah.
I went back to the apartment and then I was like, I have so much energy and like I'm feeling like funky, like I don't know, like I just kept doing this, like I needed to do something. So then we cleaned the entire apartment in like 5 minutes. Like a college apartment, like you know college apartments are nasty, bro.
Especially guys, I had college dorms, guys are gross.
5 minutes to clean that between two people, and we were six, like we were six people living in the apartment. 5 minutes, two people. And then I was like, you know what, bro, how is it barely 9:05 or something? I was like, I'm gonna go take a shower or I'm gonna take a bath. So then I go and then I thought I was in the bathtub for like an hour, bro. I was there for like 2 minutes and then I was like, no, how is it like only 2 to 3 minutes? Like, no, this is too long. I got bored. I thought I was there for so long that I got bored.
Yeah.
So I get up, I get dressed, and then I'm like, okay, well, Thomas is, I'm going to bed. Like, I'm tripping too hard. I go to bed, and the second I close my eye, close the door, turn off the lights, and then the second that I close my eye, like, I lay down, and when I close my eyes, my bed disintegrated, and I'm just floating in darkness in the position that I was laying down. But I couldn't feel my bed. Like I was just floating and I could just see myself and feel myself as I'm floating in a black void. And I would open my eyes again and everything would like rematerialize. And I'm like, okay, I'm still in my room. And I'm
this was just Woodruff.
This is the Woodruff. And this was like four seats or something.
What do? You snort it?
No, eat it. Just eat it. So it was grounded. It was grounded and my friend gave it to me in like he bought like tiny capsules and like he put the ground seeds in the capsules.
And you trusted it. What made you trust that?
He's my best friend. He's my college best friend.
You never hear those stories where the best friend accidentally OD his other friend.
We almost died twice, in car crashes during that year. And I was like, look, Tom, like, bro. Like, we haven't died. Like, I just don't think we're gonna, you know, like, this is not our year for us to die. So,
this isn't our year to die, bro. We're doing it.
So, I had trust in the universe that I was good. yeah. And I just could see myself floating. And I was like, I don't have an option. If I have to sleep, I just have to float. If I have to float, I'll float. And I floated for like an hour and then I passed out. Yeah,
that is. I've never done wood seed Woodrose. I've done a euro before, and that shit, it's like it really makes you talk about all your feelings, all your emotions. Like, if you like in your feelings, like that shit would probably make you fucking go do something you don't want to do because it's like. If you mad, oh, you ready to go to war. And then literally I'm sitting here like, bro, this is not even me. But like how you said that you slept it off, like what made me stop fucking with that shit is there was one night why I took one. It was called like a Dior or some shit. Took one of those. I took a half of a half, right?
Mm-hmm.
A person shared the other half with me. I won't share it because I don't know how bad this drug is. I don't know. But I took it. And then, like, I was amplified, turned up, pupils was dilated as fuck. It was only supposed to last for a little bit. Went home. When I woke up the next day, I was still rolling. Like, I looked in the mirror, and my eyes was still blood, like, pitch black. And I was like, oh, my God. And then you know what the hell I did? Called out of work, told them, hey, yo, I can't come in. Like, I'm not feeling like myself. went to Target, got me a fucking drug test. Bro, kid you not, I pissed on the drug test. I'm like, I'm curious as fuck. I got to see what's in here. Bro, it was like MDMA, motherfucking ecstasy, man.
No.
I was like, hey, look. Even though I was, like I said, I accidentally did meth on accident one time. Once I realized, actually, I took Euros three times before that. This time was just so bad, it made me test the pee. So I guess I took meth three times. And then once I realized it was meth.
You were done.
Look, I was done, but then I was like, no wonder they leave their families. It makes sense. I would leave my family for this drug.
That's so wild.
Bro, my happy, yo horny, you feel like you hit the motherfucking lottery and J-Lo and Kim Kardashian is at home waiting on you. Like, you feel like that guy. But it kills your endorphins. Like, the next day, I had no emotion. Nothing's funny. Nothing's sad. Like, just numb as fuck.
Blank slate.
Blank slate. Because it pumps your endorphins so much that in the back of your head, like, you know, like when you're laughing hella and you feel like that pain in the back, that's your endorphins. That's the fluid that gives you that feeling. Like, that is the actual drug that makes you like you ever laugh so hard your fucking mouth hurts?
Yeah.
And then you like start feeling your head is because you're like producing so much endorphins that it's a drug literally fueling your body. And then that's why when you're done, you're like, oh my God, because endorphin, but that shit, bro, you're fucking dead. You're fucking
dead.
That's
so wild. That's so wild.
But best everything.
Yeah, I have always been hesitant of not artificial, but synthetics.
Yeah.
I've always been hesitant about synthetics. And maybe this is why I was open to trying the seeds, because they were seeds, you know? And
synthetic seeds, Nate.
I mean, do they exist?
Why not? A watermelon without seeds.
Well, GMO, well, they're a plant. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, they're part of a plant, whereas the synthetic psychedelics, like, let's say.
But what if that was like a regular seed with synthetics infused into it?
It's a really small seed. I don't know how much you can.
How big is acid?
It is also tiny.
Exactly. How much fucking fentanyl do you need to overdose? Less than a teardrop. Yeah. Come on, baby.
Yeah.
Stop acting like you need a lot.
But okay, this is why like I think I justified at the time at accepting to do it. One, my best friend, we almost died twice. We're like, we ain't dying this year. Mm-hmm. So I never thought maybe I may become crazy this year. That never crossed my mind, but I knew that I was not gonna die that year. And I had some friends who were in biochemistry and chemistry, I think one of them had done some really deep research on them. And he was one of those, like, you know, like one of those white people from like one of those white people that are like somehow they just have the hookup for everything, and they just know every single fact about everything. And I'm like, bro, like, you are very sketch, but you are like not sketch at all, because you give me every information I'm asking you about.
Look, those white boys I'll call GWPs, good white people. And those are the guys who grew up hella rich, but didn't want to be bougie.
Yeah.
So they did every drug, went against their family, went to jail, got bailed out. So now they're forced to live a normal life. And now they're hell. Bro, you need a guy for a yacht? Bro, I know a guy. And you're like, is this guy the connect? No, he's that guy.
So yeah, he was, you know, and he had told us, like, previous days, he had told us all about this, and we're like, it sounds doable. So yeah, I mean, there were multiple factors into it, but more than likely, I just knew that I wasn't gonna die that year. That's what pushed it.
Oh my God, dude.
I was just so sure. I was like, okay. And I was right. And we, you know, we're still here, almost 10 years after college, and we're still here.
Fucking still kicking.
Exactly.
So since after college, you became linguistics, you've been traveling, but right now we're in your business.
Yeah.
So like let my people know
about
your business.
So as we said earlier, I do translation and interpretation. However, my working station is at Edge Nutrition. So we are we have a protein shake bar, and you can get energy green teas and whatnot. So if you ever feel like you're hungry and you want some quick, or you're tired and slumped or anything, if you got the munchies too, come through. I got you on some dank shakes. You got some peanut butter chocolate, yes, banana peanut butter, all that good stuff.
All delicious.
So I'm here on Miracle Mile, Edge Nutrition, right next to Sam's Cafe.
Right in Stockton, California.
Right in Stockton, California. And yeah, this is where I do also. This is also my little office. And yes, there we have a little lounge where we're at. And this is my workstation. Really comfortable. And so, yeah, come check us out. Come have a conversation, a green tea or a smoothie, or just come and hang out.
At Edge Nutrition. You have an Instagram, right?
We do have an Instagram. It's also called Edge Nutrition. The logo is white and it says Edge in green. And also, if you think I'm cute, sexy, if you like my long hair, you know, also come through. You know,
hey, look, if you think my boy David cute, sexy, you want to play in his hair, he do it all. He's a catering ladies. He's a linguistics teacher. So what does that mean? He's real fluent with that cunnilingus, baby. Quit playing with my boy. What's your Instagram so we can contact?
My Instagram is underscore. I'm going to say it first with the English pronunciation. Underscore omidiotto underscore or underscore ometeo underscore. I mean, you know it's me because I got my long hair in my pictures. Got a lot of traveling, and the recent stuff is Alaska stuff.
Ladies, he's been traveling alone. So what that mean? He needs somebody by his side.
I need a travel buddy.
Quit playing. He got it together. He not out here doing nothing he not supposed to be doing.
Business owner.
Ooh.
Educated.
Ooh.
Traveled.
Say it again.
Who wants to come with me?
Come on, baby. And that is all. As usual, this is Let's Talk Forella. Like, comment, share. Follow my boy David. Come to Edge Nutrition. If you like what you see, the link is in the bio for all the information on how we make Let's Talk Forella popular. And it's just like that.